This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
You know, politicians want to force you to cover your face as a way for them to cover their own asses.
Mark Reardon.
Does the president not know what's going on?
I don't care if you think I'm Satan reincarnated.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Oh, welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. It feels good to be with you on this Friday, and being that it is Friday, I'm sure we'll have some fun. We got a huge show planned for today, and we're going to be talking to Steve Malloy, a former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member, founder of JunkScience.com, also Jim Ra, VP of Alliances and the head of polling for Numbers USA. Pretty awesome hour stacked for you. I got to thank Ethan pulling some audio clips, which we're going to play right here. And I noticed a few trends in politics or radio or television or social media or YouTube. They always say you should punch up. Punch up means you go after the people that are above you. You don't punch down the people that are below you. So, for example, if let's say you're an entertainer and you're just an average guy, you're on television, you always punch up to the big movie star, right? If you're trying to start something. But you don't go down and like degrade the people that are working the stage at a local theater. You don't punch down. And I think that trend can kind of tell you where someone is, where they think they are on the ladder, the hierarchy. And in politics, if you are Kamala Harris and you're starting to show up on a bunch of news shows, you're all of a sudden doing interviews when you're inaccessible for all this time, you're doing town hall meetings when before you couldn't be bothered with that sort of thing. What does that tell you? She is, I'm sure, getting internal polling that this election is very close. And all of a sudden she thought, oh, you know what? I got this in the bag, so I don't need to punch down because it makes me look bad as a politician, right? I don't have to go after those Republicans. Well, now she's punching up. What does that tell you? To me, it tells me there's a little bit of desperation that's going on inside of the campaign. And we're starting to see a lot of the, you know, big news type of stations, commentators, they're all sort of coming to the same conclusion. Ethan, can we play clip number two?
I think that when you approach a campaign like this entirely based on the assumption that the media can market you as some type of generational political talent, something that she's never actually shown herself to be, you're counting on a lot of people to make the case for you based on vibes, not on anything that you're actually going to do as president. That's why you see their change in strategy over the past week, where they've embarked on this media blitz to a bunch of friendly interviewers, trying to reshape and reestablish her as someone who is the face of the future, as someone who has momentum. I don't think she's been successful doing that. And I think that the blue wall that they once had is increasingly trending toward Donald Trump. And I don't think that they really have a plan to get their feet back under them in time to win in November.
Ooh, the blue wall. And it's so funny because that's what they're calling it. They're going on this bus tour, the blue wall bus tour. I think it's Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan. Governor Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan has been a big surrogate for them traveling all across the country. Now, keep in mind, I used to be here in St. Louis, and you probably have heard me fill in, and, you know, I had a show on KMOX and all that stuff. But I very familiar with St. Louis still. And I remember whenever there's this sort of desperation, why do they always hop in a bus? Claire McCaskill, like, oh, I got to hop in a bus. And then she was flying around in a private plane. But the empty bus was driving around to give the impression, oh, I'm one of you. It's so phony. Oh, we're going to hop on a bus. And to give credit to Kamala Harris, and not that I have to, at least she wasn't dumb enough to give someone a Dorito chip as if it was a Catholic communion. Hey, get on your knees and I'm going to feed this to you like it's Catholic communion. Like, Gretchen Whitmer did. What a weird, weird thing to do. So I, you know, maybe some of the people around her are trying to keep things tight still. They're not in full desperation mode, but the fact that she's even out there talking to people when the strategy was, you know what, I am going to keep my mouth shut because it doesn't benefit me to let people know what my actual super liberal policies are, or it doesn't benefit me to go out there and just give the word salads on a plate like I'm used to giving. So it's better for me to say nothing, and that's what I'll do. But now she's kind of forced into these errors that she's been giving over and over and over again out of desperation to think that maybe she can pick up a couple of points more than the errors that are going to lose her points. Can we play Carville, the Raging Cajun, clip number 10?
The election's coming November 5th. And I'm scared to death, and I'll get a time to, you know, obviously.
You're not in a reflective mood.
Not in a particular reflective mood right now. I'm very, very concerned. They need to be sharp. They need to be aggressive. They need to stop answering questions and start asking questions.
You'd like to see her do more press conferences?
I'd like her to put more things in play.
I love that. Stop answering questions and start asking questions. Don't you love that as a voter? You know, if someone asks you a direct question about your policies, all you need to do is turn it around like you're a psychologist and put it back on Donald Trump. Your strategy is, we don't like the orange man, like the orange man bad strategy. So is that what Kamala Harris is going to try to do in these instances? It's a stupid strategy. And it, to me, it just shows that she is phony. Right? But part of what you find in some of these errors that you see is in town hall meetings where she starts to admit to things that she before has denied, and she had all of her surrogates out there denying, which is her involvement in the southern border. It's been a complete disaster. So what they did was, well, you know what? We got 10 million plus people that have probably entered this country illegally since she's been deemed the border czar. It doesn't look good when they come in and wreak havoc. So, oh, you know, we'll get our surrogates out there to say she was never the border czar. And in some cases, her surrogates were these national news outlets, the ones that were out there throwing defense behind her when really they should be questioning her. Instead, they're running defense for her. So she goes out there. No, wasn't it. But you know what? Actually, no, you know, the border's not all that bad. Maybe I'll go back on all of that and I'll just take credit for it. Can we play clip number 11?
I was the top law enforcement officer of the biggest state in this country, California, that is also a border state. I will put my record up against anyone in terms of the work I have always done and will always do to ensure we have a secure border.
I'll put my record up against anyone. Oh, really now? Well, I think that this is basically what Donald Trump has been waiting to hear. Go ahead. Let's put records together. When it comes to illegal migration and what is tolerable and what is intolerable, you have one candidate by the name of Kamala Harris, where it's tolerable they can enter in by the tens of millions. And then you have one candidate, what's tolerable to him is we want the number to be zero when it comes to illegal immigration. You had one candidate who says, well, you know what? We're going to make it as easy as possible to change the classification in the categorization of the people that are entering so we can try to hide the statistics to make it look like it's more appealing, the better than it is. So when you go out there, you have the people that they know they're being purposely deceitful in the way that they're categorizing this and to say, oh, no, they're not illegal immigrants. No. They're actually we're given this status. And because of it, they're not illegal. That's wonderful. We're just going to grant and essentially finding loopholes to grant mass amnesty is what they've been trying to do. So they play this little game, and then that's what one candidate does. The other one says, this is hurting our country. We need to be more serious on this. When I was president, I was serious. When I wasn't president, we see what happens. So if you want to put the two of them on stage again and say, okay, let's really go toe-to-toe when it comes to our records when on illegal immigration, she's going to lose that every time. So why would she go out on stage and say, oh, I'm very proud of my record as border czar? It's, I think even people that consider themselves pretty liberal would look at that and say, this absolutely needs improvement. And some of these honest journalists that have gone down and looked at the border and all the problems that have happened with it. One of the other things that we find, and this is a side note when it comes to being a border czar, you have Joe Biden who cuts this deal with Mexico for billions of dollars that tries to keep the immigrants in Mexico, and he pulls this deal, which, by the way, we still don't know what the official numbers are on this, how much he had to, and I'm going to use the term bribe, Mexico to try to slow immigration by having them stay in Mexico's country. So he says, okay, it's a, you know, I'm probably going to run for reelection. You know, this is looking bad. Maybe I'll try to fix it now in January. So you start to see immigration slow down because they cut this deal with Mexico. We know they cut the deal. Mexico has talked about it. They're holding us hostage and saying we want more billions of dollars in order to uphold this deal. And we don't even know what the full number is because all of this was done in secret. No transparency with this administration. Let's rewind back to the Trump administration. How did he handle it? Well, he went down there and said, I'm just going to slap massive tariffs on you unless you stop this. And what happened? Mexico did it for free, $0. One is doing it for an election. One is doing it to try to help this country. That's the big difference between the two when it comes to immigration. I know we have a guest coming up. I don't know how much time we have. Ethan, you're going to have to tell me, what's the right time to break? Do I have time for one more clip? Would we be able to do that, Ethan?
Yeah, we got time for another one.
Okay, let's do one more clip. What you also find as part of the desperation is former President Barack Obama. He was speaking to a group of what looked like black men and women. It's like a organization. I can't remember what the organization was called, but it's basically Black Voters for Kamala Harris or whatever it may be. Can we play what his message was to those voters? This is clip 14.
I'm speaking to men directly. Part of it makes me think that, well, you just aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. And you're coming up with other alternatives and other reasons for them. The women in our lives have been in our backs this entire time. They've been raising us and working and having our backs. And when we get in trouble, and the system's not working for us, they're the ones who are out there marching and protesting.
Okay, so his message to in the organization was Black Voters for Harris Walls. He said, hey, women have had our back. Now you need to have women's back, particularly because she's a black woman. That was Barack Obama's message to this organization. Babylon Bee, I think, summed it up correctly. This is their headline to it. Now is not the time for independent thinking, Obama tells black Trump supporters. This is not the time for independent thinking. So let's recap what's going on here. They're reversing and trying to make it look like we're doing good things on the border as if, hey, no one's going to buy that. But, you know, we'll say it anyway. You're finding that there's a downward trend, more media appearances to get in front of the camera. Now that absentee ballots and things like that are being mailed out in some of these big swing states, you see Carville said, just shut your mouth and go on offense as opposed to actually talking about what your policies are. And you have the former president, Barack Obama, maybe one of the most influential people in your party going out there and essentially saying that, you know what, women have had your back, particularly your moms, like black women. And you know what? You need to have their back now. So you have to vote for Kamala Harris. Forget this independent thinking thing. This is your time to pay the piper. That's desperation, if I have ever smelt desperation. All right, I know we have to go to a break. Steve Malloy is joining us after the break, former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member and founder of junkscience.com. We're going to talk to him about energy and environment. Ooh, I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Find me online, Ryan Recker Radio. If you look up Facebook, Twitter, things like that, you're listening to St. Louis's home for conservative talk, 97.1 FM Talk.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. It's always a pleasure to be with you. You can find me online, Ryan Recker, on Facebook and Twitter. Joining us now is former Trump-Pence EPA transition team member and founder of junkscience.com. Steve Malloy, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Hey, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
You're also with the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. So we've been seeing some hurricanes, and we've seen some pretty devastating ones hit the South. So does that mean we have to give Al Gore and John Kerry a blank check and give them whatever they want to fix this? Is that what we should be doing?
No, absolutely not. You know, so these things have happened before. They're going to happen again. You know, the Tampa area, for example, has not really been hit by a hurricane in 100 years, but it was hit 100 years ago in 1921, and before that, 1841. So these things happen. They're going to happen again in the future. There is no trend in over the last 120 years of landfalling hurricanes in Florida. There's no trend really between hurricanes and emissions at all. And then this is all sort of tied into a neat bow by the fact that, you know, these hurricanes, when they get into the Gulf, they draw their energy out of the water, the warm water of the Gulf of Mexico. But it's physically impossible for the atmosphere and emissions to warm that water. So the whole climate aspect to hurricanes is just not there. And in fact, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which is the lead climate bedwetting agency of the federal government, they admit there is no aspect of hurricanes that is outside the realm of natural variability. So that's it in a nutshell.
That's interesting because, no, I think people are drawing this false conclusion because they want to, number one, but there's not really the science behind it. I would say this. It's kind of interesting. I've listened to climate experts and ones that have advocated for climate change initiatives. And one of the interesting things I've heard them point out, and I agree with this side of it, is that when you hear about these storms and they try to compare them to things that happened in the past, and they'll say, wow, you know, this many more people were without power and this many more people were displaced and this much more dollar sign and damage got hurt. What they neglect to tell you is that part of that is we've overpopulated areas where storms tend to go. So when you jam more people into a smaller space, obviously, there's going to be more damage when a big storm comes through. It doesn't necessarily reflect on the size of the storm or the cause of the storm.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely correct. The state of Florida, since 2005, has increased in population by 30%. And so that means, you know, 30% more people and 30% more of their, you know, crap. For lack of a better word, you know, and development, you know, that's all been crammed in there. So when these things hit, well, there's just more to destroy. I mean, we see this, the climate alarmists constantly trying to throw insurance statistics at us. You know, this is, you know, a record amount of insured damage. Well, of course, you know, we have more development, and if you adjust all these claims for, you know, GDP, for example, they all vanish. It's really a function of, as you said, the amount of stuff that's there. And you know, this is going to, Milton is going to be a hugely expensive storm, and like Helene was in Asheville. I mean, look at all the development in Asheville. Asheville, you know, which was hit by Helene, has flooded before. But, you know, it was a much more, still kind of a rural area, but, you know, even less developed when it flooded before, I believe it was, you know, in the 1920s. And of course, now the damage is going to be much greater because there's just much more stuff to destroy.
Yeah. Let me ask you this real quick, and this is kind of a side note. You're part of former President Trump Pence's EPA transition team. Were you part of bringing Pruitt on to the administration?
Well, that was a political choice that you know, Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, you know, put him up for President Trump, and President Trump, you know, did that favor. What I did was I drew up the plans to reform how EPA does science.
Ah, I got you. Well, I was going to throw you a thank you in a way.
No, but you could.
You want me to do it anyway? Well, in St. Louis, they have this Westlake landfill. And, you know, they jammed it with all of this nuclear waste back from the Manhattan Project, and it started to leak, which isn't great. And you have all these people getting rare cancers in this cold water creek. And forever, advocates have been trying to get administrations to do it. And it wasn't until Donald Trump and Pruitt took it seriously, they decided to try to fix that problem. So I was going to thank you because so many people and politicians promised and never did anything. Finally,
well,
one person did it.
Josh Hawley is still trying to get that bill through Congress. I don't think it's been approved yet. Maybe that'll be something done in the lame duck session.
Hopefully. But, you know, I thought they already appropriated because they've been doing the studies for it. It takes a long time whenever you're talking about government studies. Either way, I wanted to bring this up, too. And Steve Malloy joining us. You can find him at junkscience.com. You're one of the founders there. But Siegel, a senior legal fellow with the Energy and Environment Legal Institute. Let me ask you this just in general when it comes to climate debates. And this always flares up when there's hurricane season, tornado season, you know, big winter storm, big whatever, hot streak of, you know, hot temperatures right. in any given place. Why is it that it's always these really radical people that bring up these radical claims that get the attention? And like, that's what Congress wants to listen to. Oh, we need to listen to the wild, super fringe voices on how we handle this. But there's people that are, I mean, they study this, they acknowledge and they talk about climate change, and their way of looking and approaching it is very pragmatic, which is essentially saying we can just mitigate these things as opposed to throwing money at things that won't do anything. We're much better aligned to spend our tax money mitigating by building seawalls or adjusting this or doing that. Yeah. Put your money there. Don't give it into the hands of politicians that are going to give it to people that'll do nothing with it. Why aren't we more pragmatic when we talk about these things?
Well, you see, the climate agenda is not really about the climate. It's not really about the environment. You know, there are different people involved in climate have different agendas. You know, the American left has its leftist political agenda, which is government control of everything. And so if you look at climate, you know, their solution is government control of everything, how we can use energy, what we can drive, where we should live, you know, what kind of light bulbs we can have, all that. Okay, so there's that. You know, those people have their agenda. There's the wind and solar industry, with, you know, subsidized. You know, they have now achieved critical mass, and they have enough lobby money to lobby politicians. So they, you know, those guys own politicians and even red state politicians. And then you have, you know, the foreigners, the Europeans. You know, they want to cripple America with climate regulation. The Chinese want to also cripple America so that they can become the lone global sleeper. So everybody sees, you know, something in it for climate, and it's unfortunate that conservatives haven't realized yet how climate is being used against our country.
I think a lot of people do recognize that.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, you know, we talk about all of these different threats to the country, and in some ways not being energy independent, being reliant on someone else in the whims of when they decide to, I guess, manipulate the markets is not a great position to be in. We were starting to move towards energy independence. We were building these pipelines. We were making it easier for us to keep up with production. But instead, we've diminished our natural oil reserve, which is very scary. I don't think it's ever been lower in my lifetime. And on top of that, we're not even moving towards energy independence. What we're essentially saying is we're going to force the hand into these different means of energy that don't have any long-term testing to it. We don't know if we can be sustained by it. Obviously, we can't, because we can't keep up with the demand for some of these other alternative energies. So we're putting ourselves into a corner, which is obviously going to drive the price up and cause make everything else cost more.
Yeah, so, you know, both the Obama and the Biden administrations have destroyed just our energy sector. President Trump, you know, during that 4 years, he was able to make us energy dominant. It was really an incredible feat where, you know, we were in charge of the price of oil. But then as soon as Biden became president, he put OPEC back in charge. And I think, you know, if President Trump wins next month, then, you know, he will his policies will once again put America in charge of the global price of oil, and also develop all our energy resources so that we're firing on all cylinders and doing what makes economic sense, versus, you know, Obama, Biden, and that Biden Harris, you know, we're doing their executing their political agenda, which is to, you know, increase government control of everything.
Can I ask you, you see these things online in, you know, weather manipulation machines or whatever it is that people bring up. Is that just Russian propaganda? What is that? Do you know, do you have an answer?
You know, I mean, to be fair, the U.S. government has looked into weather modification before. From the 40s through the 70s, they, you know, were trying to figure out if they could destroy hurricanes. You know, we've learned how to seed clouds and cause rain if we want. So, I mean, that kind of stuff has happened. The notion that's been floating around that, you know, Milton is a man-made storm, well, that's just false. I mean, you know, false in that the government did not create it, and neither did fossil fuel emissions. Milton is an act of God. We don't understand where it came from. It's a naturally occurring thing, and that's just the way it is. So, you know, man has no involvement in any of these things except to clean up and be prepared, or be prepared to then clean up. They're just acts of God. And, you know, people really should just, you know, you can't control what's on the internet. I don't know that you should, but you know, it's good that, you know, people ask questions and knowledgeable people can offer their views.
Do you think, though, it's being used as a tool to, you know, like, this is what they say, like, oh, I hate using the term Russian propaganda because it was used in such a sloppy and irresponsible way back in 2016. But do you really think that's possible? That's where some of this information is coming from, outside sources, you know, China or whatever?
Well, look, you know, Russia and China have access to our media and our internet and social media. God knows, you know, who knows what they're doing. And our government has acted, you know, dishonestly enough that people are legitimately concerned about what it's doing. You know, I would just, can the government change the weather? Well, I mean, our government excels at tyranny, corruption, incompetence, and maybe warmongering they're good at. Can they control the weather? Hell no. Okay, I mean, that's just not in their bag of tricks.
You know what I can tell you they do?
Yeah.
They can lie to you, and you could see it with your own eyes what's going on, but the government will come out and flat out lie and say, no, you didn't see what you just saw.
That's how
they would manipulate it.
Right. They can do that kind of stuff. Can they actually accomplish something? You know, no, it's just not possible.
Yeah, and you think about, they use that tactic in order to influence policy, where to send money, things like that.
Yes,
so that's the type of manipulation you
need
to worry
about. That's what we should be worried about, the lying. You know, going through COVID, it was the lying, right? The lying and the bullying and the tyranny shutting people down, you know, calling up social media companies saying, delete this guy, delete that post. That's nonsense. That's what we should be upset about. They can't control. They can't control storms.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Steve Malloy, if people wanted to find you online, where can they go?
Well, best place, my website, junkscience.com, but also I'm very active on X @junkscience.
Perfect. All right. So the hurricane, people are still talking about weather, things like that. And there's a lot of junk science out there. What do you jump to next after people calm down with the hurricane stuff? Is there like certain trends? You're like, well, we're getting towards the election, so I know this is going to come up. Can you have any predictions of what's going to happen next?
Well, climate and energy is just going to be big for the foreseeable future because the left has just thrown everything they have into it. They're all invested in it, you know, from all the politicians to all the companies to all the universities. It's just, they're all in. How do they ever back out of that? An emerging issue for me is also going to be all this food nonsense and the food scare that's going on right now. I don't know if I'm sure you have with Robert Kennedy. I thought all that had been debunked long ago. It's all coming back now. So I'll probably be spending a lot of time on that as well. Ooh. But mostly what I do right now is climate energy.
Okay, so hold on. Let me make sure RFK Jr. stuff, if we're thinking about the same thing. Fluoride in the water, dyes in your children's food, that sort of thing you're talking about?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, that kind of stuff.
You know what? I don't know. Because when it comes to the dyes and stuff, we try to stay away, red dye 40 and that. And we do see a behavioral change in our kids when we cut that stuff out.
Yeah, but it might just be the sugar.
I'm just saying. I mean, the sugar, for sure.
So look, let me just give you a quick example if you have time.
Yeah.
You got time? Okay,
oh, sure.
So there's a dye, Red 3, banned in California, supposedly because it causes cancer. Okay, so if you do the math, there's no evidence it's ever caused cancer in humans, just in laboratory rats. And if you do the math on how much red dye was fed the rats, a child would have to eat 186,000 red jelly beans a day.
Okay. Don't give them a challenge.
Now, I know you don't feed your kid that many red jelly beans.
So what we decided to do a long time ago was strap our children down and force feed them, what'd you say, 100,000 jelly beans? So, yes.
That's 186,000 a day.
186,000, yeah. So I guess we're under at 100,000.
So, look, there's just, okay. You know, I understand there's a lot of confusion about this stuff. And, you know, it's easy to scare people with well, you know, chemicals. And I went through this with the left, and now it's sort of disconcerting to me to see it popping up on the right. But so I'll be spending some time on that.
All right, Steve. You know what? I'm going to have to follow you for that, because I, for one, hear this sort of stuff, and I think, you know what? He's got something to that. I get it. I'm not basing it based on the way he looks, you know, out there with a shirt off or whatever. Hey, look at me. I'm healthy. I just base it on the observations of how my kids act when I give them some of this sort of stuff. Yeah. And there are some companies, we shop at Aldi and you go like buy their cereal and they cut that stuff out. And it's like, okay, that seems better.
Some kids just need to have the sugar limited, you know, because you give them sugar and it's just like, it's like mainline and something.
Isn't it better just to cut sugar out altogether, though?
Well, yeah, look, you know, everyone is different, and it depends on who you are, what you are, how much sugar you should eat. And always, you know, kids ought to be eating nutritious food. Everyone has to eat a balanced diet. I like to say there's no good food, bad food. You got to look at the whole diet. If your diet is nothing but sugar, that's not good. Okay.
I like it.
All right. So again, as you get older. Yeah.
Oh, I get that, man. Things changed. After I hit 40, everything changed.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
So again, if people wanted to find you online, where can they go?
JunkScience.com and on X at JunkScience.
Perfect. See, Malloy, thank you so much for joining
us.
We really appreciate it.
Bye.
I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk. Favorite book. Welcome back. Always like this time we get together. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. Joining us now, VP of Alliances and Head of Polling for Numbers USA, Jim Robb. Thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
You bet, Ryan. Happy to be here.
So I wanted to go back to the 2020 election, which essentially I think sums up the campaign for Joe Biden. When he was on The Breakfast Club, he said, "If you don't know who you're voting for, then you ain't black." And I think a lot of people looked at that and said, "Oh, wow. OK, you're just flat out saying it now." So now here we are in 2024. Joe Biden is out. You have Kamala Harris in. You have former President Barack Obama going to these, I guess it was black voters for Kamala Harris rallies, and speaking to the kids that are there, the young voters, saying essentially like, "Hey, come on now, you know what you are, so this is the way you have to vote," you know, basically seeing it in a very dulled up special way. Now, Politico reports that Latino support for Vice President Kamala Harris isn't where it needs to be. And some of the quotes in that, if Democrats aren't worried about her performance among Latino voters, they probably should. So here's the next thing. How long will it take for Joe Biden to go out and say, "Well, if you don't know who you're voting for, then you ain't Latino"?
Well, yeah, the problem is obviously their grip on black voters is lessening bit by bit, but their grip on Hispanic voters is sliding downhill. It's like a California mudslide at this point, right? So in the Republican Party was almost hysterical after Romney was defeated, because they only got 27% of the Hispanic vote. Okay, so that was low, and it was much lower than it had been just a couple elections before. So Republicans were rightly concerned, but at that point they did the exact wrong thing. They decided what we need to do to get the Hispanic vote in the future is be more open borders. So that's when they sent that big Senate Gang of Eight bill in 2013 and 14. You'll remember that, in which it was like a full amnesty and doubling legal immigration. And they thought they did all that just to get the Hispanic vote. Well, that, because of Numbers USA and our allies, that bill was defeated. It would have been terrible for America. But Trump turned the script upside down, because he figured correctly that Hispanic voters are Americans. They're not some foreign presence in America, and they want the same thing Americans want. They want safe streets. They want good schools. They want good paying jobs for themselves, and they want safe borders. They want orderly borders. They don't want high immigration. So at Numbers USA, we've been polling with our polling partners, Rasmussen, for more than a decade. And we talked to thousands of Hispanic voters every year. And we found that Hispanic voters hate illegal immigration because it hurts them worse than any other group. Because with all these people coming in under the Biden administration from south of the border, because Biden basically stopped all Trump's policies and failed to put any of his own policies in place. So it was just chaos down there, as we all know. So millions come, and this hurts the Hispanic voters more than others, because these people coming in, they're competing for the same jobs, the same housing. They're driving up the cost of things, and there's a certain amount of crime that's coming up, and that's making streets less safe. So obviously, this is irritating Hispanic voters. Now, we're seeing this in polling, Brian. So, and Joe Biden got, Trump in the last presidential election, 2020, got about 37 or 38% of the Hispanic vote, which was way more than he did the first time. And then in 2022, the Republican share of the Hispanic vote went up to 39%. Mm-hmm. And now it's continuing to rise, and the Democratic share is continuing to fall even faster than the Republican is rising. We have a new poll out about a week ago from USA Today, and it shows in Nevada, Hispanic man 18 to 34 years of age, Trump 53%, Harris 40%.
Wow.
Arizona, same poll. Hispanic men, 18 to 34. Trump, 51%. Harris, 39%. So we're seeing we've talked about why people are turning the way they are. But a couple of the interesting wrinkles is in the white voter group, you think of younger voters as being the most liberal. It's not always true, but there's a truth in it, right? But in the Hispanic group, the younger voters are turning more conservative and more Republican, especially the men. And I think this has got tremendous upside for the Republican Party in the years to come. And it's about a lot of things. Hispanics tend to be family oriented, as everyone mm-hmm. knows, and doesn't mean there's some kind of supermen who have no problems and no flaws, but they tend to put family values at a pretty high premium, right? And Republicans always are talking about family values, stressing families, so they're listening to that. Hispanics may be a bit more religious than white people in general, and religious voters of every ethnicity vote more Republicans, starkly so. It's dramatic. In fact, religiosity, meaning how often you practice your religion, is the leading single indicator of how likely you are to vote Republican.
Wow.
This is something that's not well known, but it is well documented. So if you go to church at least a couple of times a month, you know, you're sort of like a sort of regular, you're in this country, you're much more than 50% likely to vote Republican. And if you never go, you're only maybe 30, 35% likely to vote Republican.
Wow.
So that's a dramatic difference. And it's true in every ethnicity.
That's amazing. And I know we got to go, and we're getting close to top of the hour news. People wanted to look you up online. Where can they find you?
Right. NumbersUSA.com. We've got tons of information about immigration, like the illegal immigration that Biden has led in. And then my book on Hispanic voting trends is called Political Migrants, Hispanic Voters on the Move. Political Migrants. You can find that on Amazon.com.
Very telling, you know, and maybe this could be one of the big things that pushes this upcoming election. Jim Robb, thank you so much for joining us here in St. Louis. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. We're going to have not Sue's news, but Fred's news coming up after the break. 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gunshop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom.
In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.